Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed.
Director Cheadle, because Donald Trump is alive, and thank God he is, you look incompetent.
Well, guess what? Director Cheadle, she's out after getting waylaid by the entire U.S. Congress. We're going to show it to you, and then my take, which is a little different. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, let's get started with the big story that everybody's still talking about all over America, and what may be remembered as one of the least democratic moments in our country's history, the media, the Democratic Party overlords, political insiders, have all come together to anoint Kamala Harris, even though she isn't now and never has been the choice of most Americans. That's important, damn it. I mean, look at this chart. This thing was put together, by the way, by the lead political writers at the New York Times. Each writer was asked which candidate is most electable, and look who came in as the worst or, quote, riskiest choice for the Democratic Party. There she is. Lo and behold, Kamala Harris. According to the political writers at the New York Times, no less. That's not me saying this. That's them saying this. But regardless of that, the Democratic Party seems hell-bent on ramming her through whether she's the people's choice or not. And if you're an American, or hell, if you're just a citizen of the world, you got to be bothered by stuff like this. Now, to be fair, she may end up being the greatest candidate in the world. You know, to be fair, she may be spectacular. I don't know. So I can't predict the future, but I can tell you this, her track record simply does not reflect that. She has lost badly in every single national race she's ever run. Her approval numbers as vice president have been dismal at best. Those are facts. That's not about what I think she's going to do. That's what I know she has done. But the party doesn't care, it seems. That's troubling. They're not willing to consider anybody else at this point. It's Kamala or nothing. Look, as far as they're concerned, all that matters to them at this point and is perhaps what they think and guess who else, what Hollywood thinks. Seriously.
Often described as an ATM for Democrats, the world's film and TV capital in Los Angeles has long been an important source of the party's campaign funds. On Monday, rapper Cardi B, actors Jamie Lee Curtis and Viola Davis, and TV producer Shonda Rhimes threw their support behind the U.S. vice president.
Think about that. A bunch of famous people who happen to be wealthy in Hollywood, the big names in Hollywood, the big names in the Democratic Party, all coming in now endorsing or being told that they have to endorse Kamala Harris. And of course, the corporate media is jumping on board as well. You know what that does? You know what that does? A couple things, really. It makes it impossible for any other candidates to throw their hat into the ring without feeling like they're going to be ostracized. Hell no, I'm not going to do this. If I do this, they're going to crush me. I'm never going to get any more money. No one's ever going to support me. So they're like, okay, yeah, I like her. Yeah, she's great, right? But even more importantly, it's keeping out fresh or different ideas, you know, from maybe other candidates might have that bring to the table about war and peace, for example. So everybody doesn't have to think the same way in the Democratic Party. The economy, inflation. Maybe some people might have a more progressive perspective. Maybe some people might have a more conservative perspective. Why not? Why not throw the ideas into the ring and then see what comes out that's the best? Nope, can't do that. Because we're the Democratic Party. That's a small D, not a big D, right? See, all of this is off the table because the party apparatchiks say so. The party apparatchiks say so. In fact, even if some other candidate did want to take on Harris in the convention, look how hard it would be for them to do that. Check this out.
If no other Democrat decides to challenge Harris, these delegates will likely support her, either by virtual vote or by a vote on the convention floor.
And the convention would move ahead pretty drama-free.
But if others do decide to run, the process could become more like a mini primary. In order to get their name on the roll call vote and make speeches, a candidate would have to circulate a petition and get more than 300 delegates to sign it.
As for me, I like drama. I want drama. Drama's where you get good ideas. There you go, Manila. All you got to do is show up to the convention, get to know 300 people, and get their signatures on a petition, and you too can maybe run against Kamala Harris, right?
Or get to know them virtually on this virtual roll call. But look, the party also has this rules book, right, that's fraught with loopholes, what ifs, if this, then that. And the book has about as many pages in it as Moby Dick. Not only does the Democratic Party make it difficult for what I call a non-aligned Democrat to jump into the race, yeah, like we saw RFK Jr., but the party poobahs will see that there's an end to your political career coming to a screeching halt, yeah, unless you have their blessing to proceed. That's why this is not really an election process, but a selection process. And look, think of it this way, Rick. You go to a restaurant that advertises this giant menu full of options for the whole family. There's a meal for everybody, right? Your vegan sister, your gluten-free cousin, your meat and potatoes dad. But then you get there and the server tells you, oh, sorry, that menu item isn't available today. Right. And oh, nope, not that one either. Nope, sorry, not that thing either. So eventually you get around to asking the server, okay, why don't you just tell me what you do have available? And that's really how elections are run writ large for both parties here in the US, but it's even more complicated, yeah, and this analogy even truer for the Democratic Party.
Here's another story about the handling of Kamala Harris, which I think is kind of fascinating. So here's the deal right now. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is gonna be coming to the United States to speak at a joint session of Congress. And guess who's not gonna be there? Guess who's not going to be there? Vice President Kamala Harris will not be sitting in her usual position as the president of the Senate behind the foreign head of state, right? Instead, she's going to be out campaigning. Look, watch this. Look at how NBC News reports it. Like it's no big deal that the vice president of the United States is going to be giving up her seat at this very important speech.
But according to two congressional aides, Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland will preside over his joint address to Congress rather than Vice President Kamala Harris, who's expected to be campaigning.
You know, talk about conspicuousness through omission. I mean, hell, Manila, what do you think of this? What are we not being told? What's the real story here?
Okay, let me go back to the aforementioned celebrity front. And I promise there's a point to this. The Democrats are generally the party of Hollywood. Don't know how or why it became that way, but it's like the sun rising in the east. It just does. Mm-hmm. Celebrity endorsements are that much more valuable right now for this fractured Democrat party after the last 9 months of disaster in Gaza. Hollywood elites won't touch the topic unless you're, of course, like the Hadid sisters, but broadly speaking, Hollywood has the attention of the youth vote. The youth vote, however, is on the ground protesting U.S. support of Israel. Gaza-Israel is the topic, Rick, that lost Joe Biden the support of younger voters. So the fact that Harris is trying to show face or save face, depending on how you look at it, by not appearing publicly with Netanyahu, that's all for PR, because the reality is she is still willing to meet with him behind closed doors, where she won't be met with the public ire or photo ops
and not
that
just,
can
and
you know,
not,
add to the and, bad polling and, with well, young
but,
voters.
But wait a minute. You said meet with him. Of course she has to meet with him. She should meet with every political leader and every head of state out there. It's not that she's going to meet with him. It's that she's going to kiss his butt the same way that Joe Biden kissed his butt and every other U.S. president, including
it.
Trump, will kiss his butt. And that's the problem.
That's the problem. It's a PR move to say, oh, I'm not going to be there. I'm boycotting his speech, but I'm going to meet with him privately. This is especially a big deal, Rick, in the crucial battleground state of Michigan that is supposed to be the last of this so-called blue wall.
So what you're saying is it's a lie. It's a lie. It's dishonest.
It's Hollywood. I mean, it's a show.
If nothing else, your job is to be there behind the head of state, in this case Netanyahu, who's massacring people and trying to get rid of an entire population of people. And you don't want to be there because it might make you look bad, even though you, your husband, and everybody else you know supports everything that he's doing. But you're not going to show
all
up just to give people the impression that maybe there's a possibility that you're not going to support him when you know damn well you will. That's dishonest. That's horribly dishonest. And that's the kind of thing that's why I put that NBC report. They didn't even mention anything about, oh, yeah, he's some head of state. That's crazy. By the way, one more thing before I let you go. Just as we were going on the air today, we learned that the head of the U.S. Security Service, the agency that's supposed to protect presidents and dignitaries. Yeah, Secret Service. What did I say? What did I say?
I don't know.
Yeah, Secret Service, whatever. The head of the U.S. Secret Service, the agency that's supposed to protect dignitaries and the president, has resigned. And it came after she was viciously savaged yesterday by members of Congress. Here's a taste.
The Secret Service has a leadership problem, and it falls on you.
It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed.
Director Cheadle, because Donald Trump is alive, and thank God he is, you look incompetent. If Donald Trump had been killed, you would have looked culpable.
Now, Director Cheadle, would you agree that this is the most serious security lapse since President Reagan was shot in 1981 of the Secret Service?
Yes, sir, I would.
And, you know, do you know what Stuart Knight did when he was in charge at the time of the Secret Service? Do you know what he did afterwards?
He remained on duty.
He resigned. He resigned.
Yeah, and now she's resigned too. But let me just say something about this, about that performance art, really, that you just witnessed. While I'm not defending Kimberly Cheadle or the Secret Service for the horrible job they did defending former President Trump, it seems rich to me that members of Congress, who are among the most least competent people in our country, would be yelling at somebody for not being competent as they perform for their 15 seconds of fame so they can appear on some cable news channel with Wolf Blitzer or whatever, or Hannity or whatever. And now with that said, let me also say, Secret Service that we have learned about was aware that the shooter was there 20 minutes before he fired. And yes, the building that he was on should have been included in the perimeter, and it wasn't. So they screwed up. They screwed up bad. And they screwed up at their job. And you're only allowed to screw up once when you have that job. So, look, on the one hand, yes, she should be fired. On the other hand, it bothers me to see these people yelling at her just because they know that by doing so, it's cheap, it's easy, and they're going to appear on cable news. What do you think?
Well, Rick, I think there's a lot more to this so-called failure by the Secret Service, but I'll save that for my own podcast. But even if you are smelling something rotten coming out of Butler, PA, no matter which way you cut it, it's still an operational failure. And when you are the chief of something like the Secret Service or any mm-hmm. other big agency here in Washington, or even in the private sector, you're the boss. The buck stops with you. The failure of your underlings is directly your failure as well for not running a tight enough ship. So look, I'm going to make this real brief. We always complain that there's no accountability in Washington, especially of these unelected officials like her. If I were Joe Biden, I would have fired her already. But instead, it's only due to public pressure that Cheadle resigned in disgrace. Almost 2 weeks after this attempted assassination, this lady was doubling down, making excuse after excuse, which shows me her complete lack of integrity. It shows a lack of sound judgment for herself, let alone an entire agency mm-hmm. tasked with protecting people's lives. So, adios, amiga, that's what I say. I hear Chuck E. Cheese is hiring security guards, Rick.
You sound like one of those congressmen. I'm going to try and get you a gig so you can appear on one of those cable networks. Look at me, I'm mean and I'm angry. Anyway, thanks, Manila, I appreciate it. When we come back, John Jackman, he's an American attorney with a background in U.S. elections law. John's a graduate, by the way, from Denver University Law. He's currently the host of DD Geopolitics Show. Good show, by the way. They have a similar perspective to much of what we say, and John's going to join us when we come back. Stay right there. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. So it's called DD, as in Denver, Detroit, Geopolitics. Just want to make sure you know the name because it's a good show and I want you to watch it or listen to it. John Jackman is standing by now. He's one of the hosts of the show. You guys have spent a lot of time talking about what's going on in Gaza right now, so I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about that conversation I was just having a little while ago with Manila about this charade where all of a sudden the vice president is not going to be sitting in her seat when Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu comes to speak to our Congress. What do you make of that?
Well, as you said, you know, this is an attempt, I think, by the Democrats to try to maintain this progressive veneer while at the same time doing absolutely nothing material to really address the crisis, the genocide, quite frankly, that's unfolding in Gaza. Of course, they'll continue to give aid to the Israeli government, military support, logistical support, and even position our own military assets in the region to intimidate the axis of resistance. There's no doubt in my mind that President Harris will continue this trajectory in support of Israel. But again, this is just political theater, not wanting
exactly.
to have this black mark on her ahead of the election.
Yeah,
so
and I would almost respect her more if she just went there and said, yes, look, my husband happens to be a Zionist. The guy I work for was a super Zionist, went around bragging about it. I am a Zionist, and I'm going to sit here next to Bibi Netanyahu because, you know, I believe in him as well. Rather than pretending she doesn't, that just, you know, it just seems so dishonest, you know, like some kind of kabuki dance that she's doing. By the way, speaking of Kamala Harris, do you think there's any, has she shown you anything? Have you read anything about her that would lead you to believe that she's going to be any different when it comes to geopolitics and foreign policy than most other presidents we've had, including her boss?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I see her as a reincarnation of Hillary Clinton, essentially. And it's been pointed out by multiple prominent people that she takes the same stances when it comes to the imperialist interests of the United States and really continuing this noxious and parasitic empire that we've developed abroad. Mm. She's shown no indication that she'll be any different. And I think that her coronation itself kind of speaks to that, right? You said it. This was undemocratic. And beyond that, I think it's very interesting how the media cartels have really exposed themselves throughout this whole process.
Yeah.
I mean, right, 2 years ago, even a year ago, we were saying in unison, most of the American public, people who could see with their eyes and listen with their ears, that Joe Biden was mentally unfit for office. But we had the media saying in unison, no, he's not unfit. He's going to run again. And now here we are 80 days from the election. He drops out. And we're turning to the mainstream media cartel saying, well, what is this undemocratic process? And they're saying, are you crazy? He's mentally unfit. Right. I mean, it's what we've been saying for months.
Not to mention, by the way, staying on point, you know, they're now looking at us and saying to us, well, of course, Kamala Harris just deserves to have the job. After all, people voted for her when they chose Joe Biden. No, they didn't. First of all, they didn't even really choose Joe Biden. He was anointed for his position by the Democratic Party over everybody else, and they got everybody else to quit. And then he picks her, who at the time was polling between 2 and 4%. So, you know, how can you say that and not at least, and I'm not saying journalists should go out there and be anti-Harris, but they should at least be positioning another point of view that says, what other opinions, what other people are out there that we should consider? But they're not, John.
Absolutely not. And I love that you go back to 2020 because the Joe Biden administration itself is the result of an 11th hour coup against Bernie Sanders, basically.
Yeah.
He was in pole position at the time. And then you had all the establishment like a wave rush in to support Joe Biden, recognizing we can't have this guy, Bernie, up here talking this kind of rhetoric, even this kind of light anti-imperialism or questioning of our foreign aid and involvement in other countries. That's a no-go for the Democratic Party, which really, it sullies their very name, the Democratic Party. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a process more
undemocratic. Well, especially, and I know where you were thinking, and I'm going to take you there so you can go there, by the way. The idea that we go around the world telling everybody how they need to be a democracy like us, and this is the example that we're setting. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing to think of the hypocrisy involved in those actions.
The hypocrisy is so evident. But I think the issue is now a lot of the American people are seeing it, or beginning to see it, and questioning both of the major political parties. For the Democrats this year, I think what is really significant that I want to highlight for our audience is the departure of labor from the Democratic Party. Now, despite all the imperialism, despite everything, that's one thing that they could always hang their hat on. Oh, we're the party of labor. But as we saw, the president of the Teamsters actually went to the RNC to speak, and that shows how incompetent the Democrats have been in addressing the problems of labor, whether it's breaking the railway strike, failing to really change the fundamental dynamics for the American worker who are seeing prices go through the roof. The Democratic Party has really lost its edge of support, and I just don't know what the future is.
But let me ask you something that I was thinking about this morning when I was watching that. This morning when I was preparing my intro and I was going through videotapes, I found that videotape of Shonda Rhimes and all those famous people in Hollywood who are backing Kamala Harris because she's a progressive African-American woman. How much do you think Kamala Harris is like the average African-American citizen of the United States who happens to be female?
I mean, very, very little. you just look at who supports her campaign. You look at her past history, from the AG to the Senate. I mean, she spent her life among the political elites, the celebrities. And at a time when the divide between our elite political class and celebrities is wider than ever, the American people are looking at this identity politics and they're calling BS.
Do you think there was one incident in particular, speaking of this, her relationship with African Americans, because they're saying, and the numbers are showing that she's going to do a little better with African Americans than Joe Biden was doing, although she's doing a little worse with white Anglo-Saxon men than Joe Biden was doing. But back when she was the Attorney General of California, I'm not sure what the exact number was, but she put hundreds, if not thousands, of young African-American men in jail for smoking what I would like to call a marijuana cigarette at one point in their life. I mean, that's not a good record.
And then she laughed about it.
Right.
And then she laughs about it, right? And this is the kind of behavior that we see from the Democratic Party, this rampant hypocrisy. And, again, people are saying, look, she's not really a party of the working class. She's willing to lock up all of these people for this minor charge while we have real violent crime, homelessness, all of these major problems in the state of California, especially proliferate. And it's created such an opening for the Republicans who, their two major issues, it seems like, this election cycle are immigration and ending the wars. And the Democrats have conceded ground on both of those issues while failing to address the problems of labor that they've typically been a little bit stronger in.
Do you think, and we're down to a couple of minutes here, so let's get down to the nitty gritty. As you look at this election right now, do you think it's possible for a majority of Americans to choose Kamala Harris over Trump and Vance at this point, just given what you know of our country and of most Americans and most of our neighbors?
Well, here's what I'll tell you about American politics is people's memories are incredibly short. So even in the span of, 75 days, things could change significantly. So I never want to prognosticate too much or give a firm prediction. At this point, the Republicans are clearly in pole position. And I see Kamala Harris's candidacy continuing to accelerate this departure of labor, the departure of young people, the departure of the real energetic base of the Democratic Party. So that's my feeling. But again, anything could happen, as we've seen over the course of the last week.
We've got a little bit left. Is there somebody out there you think would have been a slam dunk who could have at least competed better against Trump and Vance? Is it Michelle Obama? Is it George Clooney? Is it Gretchen Whitmer? Is it the governor of California? What do you think?
Well, I think that the Democratic Party in general is more or less in the same position. Regardless of who they nominate, they have been so captured by these corporate interests, our financial cartels, that they really can't present a strong message for the American people. The person I would have said is Bernie Sanders, but I think that he's also conceded so much ground to the Democratic Party that most Americans now just see him as a Democratic partisan, whereas before he used to have more of this independent veneer. Yeah. But what I will say, I'll just mention this one last thing. As it's a little bit poetic, and I'm not sure if you heard about it, but as President Biden dropped out of the race on Sunday, we also saw the launch of the American Communist Party standing against both major parties, which made a lot of waves online. Obviously, a very minor faction of the American political system so far, but a note that things might be changing over the course of the next few years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you never know what young people are doing out there these days, those crazy young people, you know. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. John Jackman, DD Geopolitics. Check him out. Thank you, my friend. Well, let's do this again.
Definitely. Anytime.
And that's our show. Remember, always be looking outside your own box when you're looking for truths, because truths don't live in boxes, as we like to say. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.